When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Now from Hollywood, California, the horror capital of the world, the Boulé Brothers, Creatures of the Night.
Hello, uglies, and welcome to the Boulé Brothers Creatures of the Night post-mortem recap and commentary on the Boulé Brothers Dracula Season 5, Episode 8. As always, we are your ghost hosts, the Boulé Brothers, Swanthula
and Drakmorta.
And for fans of the Boulé Brothers Dracula, we are recapping this season of the show for those who want to go behind the scenes with us as the show's creators for a little deeper look into the world of Dracula and what it's like to work on the show.
Are you ready to dig into this episode?
I'm ready to dig into this episode so I can get out of Los Angeles and have some time off. So let's do it.
So you're looking forward to taking a little time off.
I really am. I mean, I think this is like the first time in years where we will actually and like legitimately be unplugging, traveling, off the grid, unreachable, and able to enjoy the holidays.
Yeah, and I have to thank the quote fans. Yes. A certain segment of the fans for that, because we have decided to take a 2-week break on airing episodes of the Boulé Brothers Dracula. And why is that?
Well, it's because some of the fans made our lives a living hell year after year after year when the finale came out. And I don't want them to consider this a punishment, but I do want them to consider this a punishment.
Yeah, honestly, okay, the last two holiday seasons, Christmas seasons in a row, have been completely demolished by the fans.
Like, overtaken in an incredibly unexpected, overzealous, psycho way.
Yeah, and that was like, yeah, it was season 4, it was right before the finale, mm-hmm. and then it was Titans.
Right after the finale.
Yeah, and it was
both
like,
of which
it both
succeeded.
Both which aired maybe, what, 2 days or something, 2 or 3 days before Christmas, and it was just like, so ugly for the cast and crew and everybody. It was like, this year, we're taking it off. Yeah. I am not going to let that happen. I will not let that happen this year. Everyone needs to calm down.
Yeah.
Eat your holiday hams. Just like sit in the snow and think about your life and why you shouldn't be on the internet as much as you are.
Yeah.
And then we'll come back and see who wins the show.
Exactly. Ooh, I love that for us. And I do think it was bad for the crew and the cast, but I think it was the worst for the two of us.
Right. Well,
yeah.
Well, that's what happens on the shows operating through the holidays, right? You can't really let go or disconnect. You sort of have to still be there to man the fort and, you know, see the ship in. But not this year. The ship is going to take a quick departure through the Bermuda Triangle for a little vacation, and then we'll come back and pull it into the dock.
Yay! I love the Bermuda Triangle for vacation.
So, yeah. So we are taking, you know, people will probably ask, why did we take a break? Part of the real reason, too, that we're taking a break with the Boulé Brothers Dracula is because when the winner is announced right before Christmas, it's like, the winner, yay! And then 2 days later, everything shuts down. Everything shuts down. Everyone goes into holiday hell, and you never hear about it again. And I feel like it really robs the winner of the opportunity to be celebrated. That's why we're taking the time off. We'll find out the winner in the new year. I think it'll be fantastic. They'll have a lot of eyes on them. They'll have time to really soak up their win. Also, I think that affects how we're going to put the show out this year. As people notice, like, we're casting much earlier, we're getting started a lot earlier because we hope, and this is my hope, is that we will be airing through the fall and Halloween season and wrapping up on Halloween. Yeah. That's the plan.
That would be ideal. Or it'll be some version of that. We'll see.
We'll see if we are able to hit that target, but that's what we're shooting for.
Yeah. And you mentioned casting. I just want to touch on that for a minute because the response for this casting announcement has been incredible.
Yeah.
Like more applicants in the first 24 hours than any other season before it. And we just want to stress that there isn't a huge amount of time. I think there's 5 or 6 weeks to like get all your materials in.
Happy holidays, uglies.
May we give you a little piece of what you've given us in years past? Stress, anxiety.
A gift from me to you.
From our hearts to yours. But yeah, so we are going to be giving kind of preferential treatment to people that apply sooner than later. We have a quick roster to fill out, and there are already like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of applicants. So I know we're going to have an amazing season.
I want to remind international competitors, get your stuff in as early as you can. If you have to cut a couple of corners to do it because it's imperative because of the quick turnaround and the holidays and, you know, agencies being shut down and stuff. It's imperative that you get your stuff in early. So please do.
And speaking of the holidays, this is a slow time for, I think, everyone. Everyone has like a lot of leisure time and downtime. And so some of you at home might be looking for recommendations from us around the holidays. So go watch Christmas Evil, a 1980s under-celebrated classic? I don't think I'll say that, but it is a slasher film.
It is a horror Christmas classic in some people's hearts and minds.
In John Waters' heart. We will be reviewing Christmas Evil next episode.
Yeah, so next episode is going to be our Holiday of Horrors episode. So make sure you join us because, you know, the show is going to be on hiatus, but Creatures of the Night is not. We will still be coming out weekly during that time. And we have a special holiday-themed episode planned for you. And we're going to answer a ton of the listener questions that we have not had time to get to yet. So that's going to be a fun one.
Yay. And on that note, we're going to take a quick break and we will be right back. Welcome back, everyone. And also, we want to welcome the supervising producer of the Boulay Brothers Dracula Season 5, who surely has the best behind-the-scenes intel from the show that anyone could ever. It's little Miss Ian DeVogler.
Breaking news from the set of the Boulay Brothers Dracula Season 5. I'm back! Oh, and also, a cube is a square.
Oh, wow. God. Oh, yeah. What'd you think of that?
Oh, my God. You know what? Not a spoiler, we're already past that, but R.I.P. Cynthia Dahl, you are missed, mama.
I saw a clip on social this week of Cynthia, who's on her Hard Candy tour currently, where she has worked in voiceovers from Creatures of the Night.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, no, yes. Shut the hell up.
Yeah, because she was adding us, like, this is a Creatures of the Night Stan account.
Oh,
but
my God.
I could hear it. And it's us in the background saying, oh, this was such a hard elimination. And while we're talking about Cynthia Dahl, I fucking love Cynthia Dahl. And Drax does something too. And she puts it into her show. And then she runs out like the outer space Muppet with the big tits and the big lips.
Oh, my God.
I have to say, like, Cynthia did it right.
Yeah.
You know, I kind of wanted this for people that are considering applying for the show or something. If you get cast, this is the best piece of advice I could ever give you. Once you apply, you go through this huge process, you are cast, right? You sign a contract. It goes into detail. Every single thing that's going to happen, everything that could, whatever, it's done. At that point, you come on the show and you have to trust the producers and work with them and be team the show to make the show good. And Cynthia is like the perfect example of that. Cynthia is the narrator. I'm like, because Cynthia understood the assignment and played ball.
Day in, day out, Cynthia came to perform, came to work in the floor shows, in the lab, an icon.
Yeah, some people come on the show and I think that they see behind the curtain and they start to become, you know, they sort of fall out of love with it because they start to think, wait, this is like a TV show and there's cameras and there's people and there's producers telling me to do stuff. They're trying to exploit me. They're trying to do this. And I'm like, at that point, it's too late.
Oh, yeah. You see that with some of the competitors as at multiple seasons, as it goes by, you can see them sort of change. And it's sad to see because it's a fall from grace, truly.
Not to mention, if you look at previous seasons of the show and just the way that we handle our artists in general... Diva, we treat them very well.
Well, they sister don't they, see the thing is, some people live very altruistically, and I think that they think it's a documentary, and there's no cameras. I mean, I don't know how they think the show is made, because we all know what being on other reality shows are like, and I'm like, you want to talk about manufactured drama? Wow, and it's so kitten gloves on our show. And so it really shocks me sometimes. But again, these people have never been on TV before. They don't know what to compare it to. But it's just something I want to point out with Cynthia. It's like, you can see when people trust the process. Like, I feel like there's a ton of people that are like, I'm in it. Let's do it. Let's make the show. And it works out well for them. It's when you sort of get there and you start distrusting things that I think it blows up in your face. Even when you try to put a fake thing on, as we can see, that doesn't work either.
Absolutely. You can see right through it.
The fans see through it when you put on a fake persona where you're like a nicey cutie and you like everybody and everything's, you know.
It's kind of like the next level of say it, forget it, write it, regret it, put it on TV, everybody, you can't blame it on the edit. Like, everybody is going to dissect your ass.
Yeah. Totally. And then you just got to be like, I'm good with that. If you're not good with it, don't come on the show. It just don't. But
it's exactly what you say when you say, like, get ready to just be authentic, live authentically on the show. Mm-hmm. And then when you get off, I feel like some people just... they get lost in the sauce. They see how the sausage is made, and then they're like, well, I have to defend myself against everything that was said. And I'm like, just go with it. Make the merch, mama.
Right.
Make the sausage.
Be the star.
Be the star. Yeah. Like, here is the star that you want to be.
Yeah.
Just walk into the door.
Yeah, you can't change it. I feel like there's people in reality TV that embrace their villainy. If for some reason... you know, because you can't control how people perceive you.
Yep.
And you just might be a villain. People just might like to not like you. That's kind of one of the risks you take. But if they do, I feel like the people that lean into it are the most successful.
Totally.
You know, when they're like, oh, okay, that's me. Okay, well, I didn't think I was that, but I am. And now I'm going to just be that, because what choice do you have, really?
You have no choice. And the one last thing I want to say is Cynthia is fast. And that's a thing I appreciate, because like you're saying with the Creatures of the Night add-in stuff, the window closes very, very fast. We release the show weekly. Everything moves. It's a rapid clip. You better be ready with merch. Mm-hmm. You better move fast. If you think, oh, well, I made this joke 3 episodes ago and maybe now, nope, the time's passed.
Hurry up, sinners. Get your coins.
Yeah.
I won't be spending eternity in the Boulé Manor.
Well, that's something I think about.
Ooh, I love
that people that sometimes will come on if they don't, or they get turned off, or they close up and they don't trust production. And oh my God, how am I going to get edited? I feel like they go on the show. They go home a year after they think about it. They're like, I wish I had that opportunity again.
Oh, that is so many people's story. And we maintain relationships with lots of previous competitors. I mean, how many times have we heard
that? They want to come back. But that to me was a turnoff, doing Titans and seeing that to them, how important it was.
To reshape that kind of
edge. Yeah, they were, oh my God,
that's like even worse.
It was worse, and I did not expect that intensity. I thought, I was like, they've already been on the show. They're going to come back, be themselves, and have fun with it, and they know that
they get it. They've done this before. Yeah, like, this is going to be a smooth ride. No, it was the opposite. They were more measured and over-labored, and everything was thought about.
Because it's their chance to redefine themselves, and if they didn't do it, but I'm like, ooh, that's not, you're going to crash and burn that way. So I don't know, doing a second Titans, I don't know how I feel about that.
This
to be
might
totally
not sound right to come out of my mouth, but if you're going to come on the show, whether it's a regular season or it's a Titan season, you just need to be you and give it up to God.
Live, laugh, love, right?
And blast. Live, laugh, love.
You heard it here first, ladies. Live, laugh, love. Give it up to God. And anything's possible with God.
What are some more fun phrases like that?
Oh, I don't know. In this house, like, I don't know.
In this house, ... I don't know. You need that doormat.
Wow. Yes. In this house, ... She's back.
Hey, the window's going to close quick. We need merch next week.
You better make that sausage, Ian. Come on, mama.
Oh, my God. So if you want to come on the show, don't listen to anything we say.
Because what do we know?
All right. Let's dig into this episode. Yes. So this is the Blade Brothers Dragula Season 5, Episode 8. This is the episode that decides who is going to make it onto the top four.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You said it.
Oh, you said it.
On that. Damn.
I was going to say, this episode is juicy, so let's grab our graveyard shuffles and really dig deep into this juicy episode, but you just threw out the biggest, the biggest
the
juiciest
thrower.
The top thrower, everybody. We made fools of ourselves. We made liars of ourselves, because I think somewhere in there during challenge issuing, it's like, this is the episode that will determine the top three monsters of the season.
Knowing damn well it did decide the top three of the season. It just also decided who the fourth person
the top,
was.
Hey, the top four includes the top three. So yeah. You're right. Maybe
I hate
liar.
This cast. They were too good all year.
God, that is actually one of the things that I revisited looking at this episode was just, I love this cast.
Yeah.
They're great. Their drag is great. They're great in the lab.
I get annoyed with people too. Well, what, you know what? Cut that. We'll get to that.
Our team knows how to cast the damn show.
Yes.
I remember going back to season two. I was like, oh my God, we have casted this show within an inch of its life. I will never be able to cast a show better. And I think just consistently year after year, season three, season four, Titan season five, like unbelievable.
Unreal, mama.
Well, you never know, right? I mean, this sounds so crazy, but when we get to the casting part and I'm like, I don't want to cast someone that I know is going to go home, because I know what it feels like for that person to come on and go home first. And I just could not sit there for months being like, see that person? And I see how hard they're working at home to prepare for this. Well, I know that I actually just want them to go home immediately and ruin their life. Yeah, I just couldn't do it. I could not. But then it puts the other side of that coin is it makes the decision making very difficult.
And I think, as Swan aptly put, then Drac and I have to put our nicey cutie pants on. Oh, no, we have to use our save. Please, Swan.
By the time we send someone home at the end of episode one, season six, it will have been probably like 4 years since we actually did that. Because we didn't do it in season five, we didn't do it in Titans, and we did do it in season four, but at that point it'll have been like 3 or 4 years.
Well, we did do it, but then we brought someone back on episode two.
You can't count that.
But it does make it not necessarily a clean.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's dig into this episode.
Sure, let's talk about this opener, because we really need to talk about the major hint that was dropped in the form of this emergency news broadcast live via satellite. It's Little Miss DeVogler on the scene.
Yeah, you did challenge issuing. How did that feel?
And honestly, an honor. And I will say thank you to anyone who's reached out being like, where's Ian in the season? Where are you, mama? And I'm like, just wait, because this is my favorite cameo I've ever made.
I love it. It's so fun. And you did such a great job.
Thank you. I will say, I was gooped, gagged, and honored that you guys asked me to do it, because challenge issuing is a big fucking deal. Like, I could not have been any happier to do it. And I just remember filming that day. And I gotta say, y'all look so beautifully bloodied in this episode, too.
The culmination of our...
covered in blood. I forgot how bloody you got. I was like, whoa, mama.
You know I love to be liberal with the blood. Glamour and gore, sweetie. Glamour and gore.
So this is every season you have made an appearance on the show.
Yeah, I think this is my least slutty season. I think season four, strangely, may have been my sluttiest season.
You think season four was?
There's something about Let's Rip Her Fucking Throat Out that I think is just enduring and horny.
Yeah, but season two, you were like at your most sluttiest himbo and that the choking is, people out and stuff.
But then there was the makeout scene of season three.
Oh, in season three.
Yeah. That's three slut seasons.
Okay, wait a minute.
One.
Well, season one was very... he was more like...
She's entered her professional era. She's forgetting how slutty
season one, she was like bottom muscle thought.
Yeah.
Season two, she was like kind of like... perverted dom choker guy.
I was like mean himbo in season two, which I love.
Then season three, which one was that one?
Well, season three, I made out with my husband, Landon.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, so you went to fantasy long hair bottom.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And then four, you were like kind of mean beach gay.
Yeah. Well, I was mean beach voyeur gay, which I'm like, well,
The evolution.
Honestly, twink death.
Totally. You come back next year with a beard.
Oh my God. Hey, Israel, give me your fucking lunch money.
Wow. All right, so let's talk about drag kaiju and why.
So I wanted to do drag kaiju for a long time. I've been nervous to assign it because I felt like the costumes would be very hard to build, to create. But I think they had a little extra time this year, and I was like, let's just go for it. I'm sure they could do anything under pressure.
Yeah, and luckily they really showed up in the talent department too, because we got five very different visions of kaiju. From soft to hard, serpent-like to totally bestial, and it was very cool.
So they get through challenge issuing. They see that their challenge is drag kaiju, which I'm very excited about. I know you both were too.
100%. Oh, yeah. Something we've been kind of cooking up for a while.
Yeah. I feel like I remember in season 3 specifically being like, ooh, like, oh, what about a drag kaiju? Yeah. And so we have been, Mama, we have been waiting for that egg to get laid for a minute.
Yeah.
I feel like it's one of those ones that needs to incubate a bit. You know, like sometimes when we first introduce a new challenge or a new kind of theme, it gets interpreted a little strangely. And then the second year, you're like, okay, they got it.
Well, right. That's like zombie prom. I remember that was on the board for a long time. And then I think the zombie prom came out like
so good.
There are some challenges on the season 6 war board right now that have been marinating for a few years.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see how they come out.
So we see in this lab, Neo and Orgotic go next door in the cauldron and have a little talk. I feel like this is probably the most genuine evolution of a relationship that I've seen in the show before. How do you all feel about that?
I agree. It's rare to see this kind of heartfelt exchange without feeling like, oh, this is sappy. Oh, this is just gratuitous for the fans, or this isn't, you know, this is just stinks of something like staged, but it was none of those things. It felt really warm.
I'm a cynic. I am a cynic. What do you think? Ooh, and I will say that I appreciate what I feel is the reality of, I think that there is a genuine spark, but I think that both Neo and Orgotic are excellent competitors. They both have the number one spot in their minds. And I think that they see this as, oh, this is good. We have a genuine connection, but let's play it up. Oh, you have this thing for me? Oh, well, let me give you this heart. And I'm like, oh, you little bitches.
Oh, really?
You. And I love it, though. But I do love it. I'm like, do it more.
Who knows? You know, like, I felt it was genuine because, you know, they weren't prompted at all. They just sort of would do these things. And it seemed cute. So I happen to know what happens next, which I'm not going to spoil. But
don't spoil it.
I won't spoil it, but I will say, my wig was pulled back about halfway off my head in the reunion, and then it was put back. I'll just leave that little tidbit
that
for
people. That
is
a cunty look, too, when the wig is pulled half
well,
back.
Well, we used to do it on purpose.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, sure. You have this one look from the Queen Kong
that
era.
That pink hair one?
Oh, my fucking God, dude. So extreme. I remember when y'all showed up in that, and I literally just, my jaw dropped. I was like, bitch.
Yeah.
That was when you just had to sort of give it up to God and shave your head, your eyebrows, and just walk around in the day like an escape troll cave golem that doesn't deserve to live.
Haul your ass right out of Lord of the Rings in the, underworld of Middle Earth.
Now my big black pea coat on. And I mean, I look like Nosferatu during the day walking around, and it's not good.
And it wasn't a beach party. Neo says something really cool before they sort of retract and have that kind of personal moment, because I just felt like this is worth nothing, but anecdotally for me, it would have come right out of my mouth, because they're like, well, I don't know. You know, Cynthia was giving this, but and Orc was giving that. And this was actually a really heartbreaking elimination, because when we were there and the laser maids and all that, I'm like, I love them both. I hate to say goodbye to either of them. But Neo goes, I wish the universe brings Orc back to me. That would come right from my mouth.
That is out of your witchy spell book.
A Yoda after your own heart.
That's true. And then
universe bring back to me her.
And then Blackberry says something right out of your heart. Because Blackberry and Orc have this moment and they're going like back and forth
forth.
What, do you really do glamour? Well, do you show horror at all? Where are you, Blackberry? And Blackberry's like, I was in the top. And where were you?
In the bottom.
Like, yes! Blackberry was there to read.
Come on, Mama Swan. Give me the crown.
So then let's move on to this episode's judges, which I was so excited about. This is that Dragula magic, I think, coming together and making the impossible possible. We have Kevin Smith and his daughter, Harley Quinn Smith. I can't think of a better person to judge drag kaiju than Kevin Smith.
So good.
Yeah, truly an icon. And what I love about this is an icon from a different world. Maybe not having the drag knowledge, but absolutely the authority when it comes to comic book scale, all these things. I'm gagged, mama.
I don't know if people see that we try to do that, that when there's a challenge, we try to pick a judge that has something to do with the theme and then someone to, you know, judge the drag sort of. So it's like, it's Haunted Hotel. We have horror author Tanana Reeve Dew, but then we have Landon. You know, it's like,
wait, Drac, are you anticipating that the fans are going to give this team flowers for a decision like that? Oh, sister, you better be laughing, oh, laughing, no, and loving. Yeah, yeah.
With your guest mistaken. Judge, Timothy Chalamet.
Yes! Wag, mama!
And Harley was so great, too. I think she genuinely gave a lot of appreciation. Or appreciation.
No, God, I was like, how did you not say? Okay.
The finalists are, like, I think she really enjoyed just everything that was put before her.
Yeah, she's a fan of the show and drag, and she knows drag, and she understands the whole machination of it. So I thought they were great together, actually.
And I'm a fan of her blonde Lydia Dietz moment. And I told her that on set, and she was cute. Like, oh, my God. Like, sort of squealing, like, oh, I love that you recognize that. And I'm like, of course. Before we go into the floor show, we need to talk about these looks.
Ooh.
Because we are serving blood elves from the Matrix.
Do we need to talk about them?
Just quickly, because I actually love this hair and I think we look good.
You do. You look great in this
Thank
episode.
You. I think we look great too. But this is the baked potato outfit.
This is the plastic dress. Referenced
on another episode. And you know, maybe you couldn't tell because we never like to let them see us sweat. But it was 1 million degrees in that baked potato outfit.
The set is probably like 58 degrees at most. So it's very cold. And I remember sitting there in that outfit just completely dripping sweat everywhere. God. And that never happens to me. But I was like, I mean, are you going to see it through this coat? I have to be soaking wet under here and it's clear.
Yikes.
It was crazy. I mean, that was it did look cool. It looked very spacey. And I'm like, I guess if you are, you know, kaiju, kind of fits. But
yeah.
The collar, I didn't like the collar on it. I just didn't like it. It wasn't my favorite. I liked the outfit. The outfit was really hot. I just didn't like the whole look together.
Because it was see-through, there was a challenge with how it would close. And there are magnets in the front of panels of that coat.
Yeah.
That
and there's a dress made out of the same material under it to give it like two layers.
Yeah. So just maybe not the best choice. Double
plastic.
Double aluminum foil.
Now, here's the thing that I don't understand, because you see how hot we were in that, right? And part of that is you put a wig on your head and heat escapes your, you know, head. And if you have all kinds of tape and two layers of wig caps on, heat will not leave. And then a wig on top of it.
And all of the makeup, too. Like you're sealed.
And you seal it, yeah, so that heat can't come out. But this is what I don't understand. How in the hell does Orgotic not pass out every episode?
Oh, my fucking God, dude. For
Can you imagine wrapping your whole head in saran wrap?
And then latex it over in case there was any little pockets of air. You need to press them right out and seal it in. It's wild.
Well, I feel like I would pass out.
Well, especially this episode where he's on all fours, just, I mean, donkey kicking around. I was like, a mama, I would be a puddle.
It was
He could
wild.
Never hear me either. I'm like, I have to go up, like when I'm directing him in the floor show, go up and be like, turn your fucking head so I can scream into that little ear hole you poked in there.
Not Drac the football coach.
Seriously, I'm like, turn right, like right into his ear. And he's like, what? And then there's a language barrier too. So I'm like, just roll around. I don't know.
Just do what you want. Do the thing.
Do what you do.
Speaking of rolling around, one of the best moments for me was the competitors rolling around through this miniature city.
This is
another kind of magic moment thing that we've been talking about basically for years. The years that we've been talking about doing kaijus, like, we want a miniature city.
Yeah.
And I think things happen as they should, because this was the year that we had the creative vision, the time, the production team to be able to pull that off.
Yeah, no, we wanted it to look really cartoony. I think it was successful and that it looked like a page from a comic book.
Yeah.
When you go down to that lower angle where you're looking up and you see him towering over it, love it. I do have a fantasy to create an actual mechanized miniature city where the cars are moving. There's like almost like a miniature train village or something, so that they can actually smash some of the stuff.
I want like the Rampage fantasy. Do you remember that game?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Oh my god, that's for me the next evolution, climbing up on the building.
Oh my god,
falling down.
That's so good.
We need to make them for an extermination rock climb in their
Could you imagine?
Like really high.
No, that's pretty good. That's pretty good because that would freak people out.
Have you seen that's like those people that do the rock climbing and they have to camp on the side of it?
Absolutely not.
What the hell is that?
That is some wild
shit. I'm good, mama.
So that's what they're going to have to do.
Perfect. And catch me testing that extermination.
You're like, wait a minute.
I'm like, am I not tired? I think I'm just gonna keep climbing.
So Drac and I have obviously shared all of our opinions and judged this episode. Is there anything that we didn't say or any feelings that you might have on some of these looks, Ian?
Not really. I feel like we're getting down to there are so few competitors that all the things that need to be said get said. I do want to throw my own accolade, I'll say, into the arena as well. And just watching this floor show, Orgotic snatched this win in those big meaty claws, mama. The second he came out, I was like, well, damn.
Yeah.
Damn, Diva.
Yeah.
He did it.
There's conversations about, you know, him using the same materials. I think some people are like, you know, some people get it, some people don't. It's all subjective, right?
I really liked earlier in this episode when it goes to Orgotic for his creatives. He goes, I'm using all the materials that everyone is so sick of. I'm using latex. I'm using saran wrap. I was like, fuck yeah, dude.
I think some fans are noticing that similarity too, and maybe they don't love it. But for me, it's ingenuity. It's taking materials at hand and transforming them over and over and over again. That's not an easy thing to do.
It's not. I mean, one of the other people that have been on the show that I think was just the best at it was Coco. I know Coco didn't have a lot of materials and was able to make incredibly different silhouettes and incredibly different textures with not a lot. So you can do it, but I also think I know, because we've known Orgotic before the show, that is his style.
Yeah, I think that Orgotic is super talented, and I wonder if maybe that, if that reliance on the latex and the saran wrap and those sort of materials would be better received with kind of the Coco ability to sew. You know, I think Coco always managed to incorporate these unconventional materials into, like you're saying, these different silhouettes and things. And I guess I was just happy to see Orgotic do this, because I remember I gave a comment. I think it was the Monsters of Rock episode of like, oh, I think I've seen this before. But to see Orgotic on all fours moving around like this with the giant head, I was like, my criticism has been met. I'm very, very happy with that.
It's really a question of, is all drag valid? That whole question, you know, and I think it's so interesting to put all these kind of different artists on the show. Some people think it's great, some people don't. And everyone's entitled to their opinion.
Yes, so Orgotic gave us the biggest killer kaiju on the stage, a deserved win. And that is when we learned that the rest of the cast is all up for extermination and we pile our asses into the cauldron.
Delighted to tell you, Divas.
So they weren't excited about the fight, just behind the scenes. They weren't, right?
They weren't. And this is a thing that if I could personally impart onto the next cast or to anyone, yes, the exterminations are intense. Yes, the exterminations can be scary and they are designed that way. But sometimes it's just fucking fun to beat the shit out of your friends, girl.
How different was this cast's reaction to the Thunderdome, which, this definitely harkens back to that.
The same
thing.
They were
so excited to do it. Like, that was wild.
And this one, they were like, we don't want to hurt each other. And I was like,
they were scared to hurt each other.
I don't understand. I mean, it's only been a couple of years. Well, I guess it's been like 6 or 7 years since we filmed season two. But the difference in these artists' interpretation of these tasks, it's so crazy how extremely different they are.
I wonder sometimes if it's because of the stakes that are at hand. Because I think about if the three of us were going to be like, hey, we're going to go do this pugil stick thing. It's all good. Like, just have fun. I feel like we'd be like, cool. Love you to death. Let's fuck it up. Like, let's just have fun. Like, I love you guys, but let's fuck it up.
Yeah.
I just just don't get it.
The point is not to hurt each other. I mean, because you'd have to really try. You are in an inflated ring with foam cut. Like, you would have to really be mega powerful to actually hurt someone in that situation. Now, I am going to say, I have seen it happen before when we did this at a club, which we did back in the day, uh-huh. in which the first two people we asked, we had two people come in. We had like mud wrestling night. And so part of the mud wrestling, you watch the mud wrestling, but the fans could go next door in the other part of the club and battle each other in a similar ring. Well,
yes, we've been doing this kind of shit for many outlets.
So the first two people that got up there, we're like, okay, blow the whistle. The person jumped in the air like they were Thor or something and swung this thing around, knocked the other person so hard that they flew out of the ring onto the concrete floor, which I did not even think was possible. The people that running the thing was like, I've never seen this happen before. And I was like, well, of course it happened to Dawn.
Of course.
First, they get hurt because they were completely wasted, so that was nice. But yeah. I think it's a pretty safe battle, so I was surprised at how scared they were. What do you make of them being afraid to do it?
I feel like there is a little bit of a combo of this cast is a little more sensitive. I think that, and it's not a bad thing. I just think that they are more sort of sensitive artist types, mm-hmm. and they are sort of in their feelings, which is totally fair and totally fine. But I really do attribute it to, at this stage, it's not even a fear response or that they're, oh, I don't want to hurt you. It's, I want to win. I want to stay, but I don't want to be the one to send you home. Like, oh. I think that we're friends here, and I don't want you to lose out on your chance to show what you have to do. But just to be real, this is a competition.
Right.
This is what we sign up for. This is what we do. This is the show. Thank you, Madeline, for that quote.
Right. Well, I mean, eventually they got into it and started going ham. So
it ended up looking so much better than I anticipated.
Yeah.
I mean, it looked like they were really in there beating each other's asses.
Yeah. And they were, you know, it got there. I think it definitely got there with Blackberry and Neo. Like, once mm-hmm. they were warmed up, I was like, okay, stop. Like, yeah. And they were just like chasing each other around, smashing each other. So.
Yeah. There will just never be anything quite like Victoria literally chipping a tooth.
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Hardcore, man.
Wow. Yeah. And well, that one, the pugil sticks were different in Wasteland Weekend. They were not soft. were foam, but they were not soft. This was all very soft. It
Wasteland
was like boxing
Weekend
glove.
Was another level.
That was crazy. I will always remember that.
So let's move on to the end of this. So the point was all of them had to battle. The only person that was guaranteed a spot in the top was Orgotic, and everybody else had to go and battle each other. And part of that really was like, get outside of your comfort zone, like really show us that you're willing to go the extra mile, you know, don't get scared and say you don't want to do it, but whatever.
Well, whatever.
As long as you, in the end, you do it, right?
Yeah.
And so Fantasia ends up being the one that does not make it forward.
She will be so missed. I think you can feel the love from all of us for Fantasia, but that being said, I do get giddy when I see this death scene.
It's so fun.
It's so, the joy that I have in tormenting her is so good. And like, I have my little like Wizard of Oz control room like behind the scenes moment. And it's really Fantasia's swan song performance. It proves that she's not just a queen. She is a scream queen.
Yeah.
Because Fantasia is such a star. Like,
oh, yeah. Icon.
I had so much fun with her that day. I directed that one. We were all split up because there's different stuff going on. And I had a blast with her. I have some BTS I'll probably share online. I've been doing that a little like with Cynthia. I had some stuff with Anna.
Photo.
Yeah. And it was fun. It was like literally I just killed her and I was like, hey. And she's like, what? I was like, take a picture with me. She's like, okay. But I have some from Fantasia I want to share. But I think that death scene is really cool. I was happy with it.
I love it too. Mm-hmm. And on that note, with the death of Fantasia, we are going to take our second break and we will be right back.
All right, we are back, and it's time to answer some listener questions. So, Ian, will you do the honors?
This just in from the Creatures of the Night desk. Listener questions.
Mama.
Doug from DC writes, I wanted to know if you knew, or if Neo knew, about the M-U-S-C-L-E muscle men toys from the 80s. Her look was on point with those characters. I had many of them as a kid, and it took me a day, but I figured out what her look reminded me of. She hit it out of the park.
Yeah, it looks very much like that. I'm familiar with them. I recognized the suit looked like something. I didn't know what. The pink, it is exactly that.
It is. I mean, Doug, thank you. Because, wow, I had a collection of these weird little fleshwork golems too. And this floor show really does harken back to that.
Yeah.
Aaron from New Jersey asks, my question is specifically for Drakmorda. How do you feel that Blackberry only asks Mama Swan for the crown? Is your crown not as good?
That is a good question. I wonder. Wow. I assume it must. I don't know why, actually. I'm going to have to ask Blackberry.
Maybe Mama Swan gives you the crown and Drak gives you the scepter or like the flowers or whatever it might be in that season. I don't think so.
I like this defending.
A good question. What the fuck? No, I'm kidding.
Our next question is from Drakmorda. Blackberry, why? Samantha from Mississippi. Oh, the gay part. So Samantha from Mississippi. You've mentioned Ork and Neo, and maybe Anna, possibly not understanding specific cultural references since the show is heavily based on American culture. Does the Belay Brothers Dragula have a translator available for contestants whose first language isn't English, or is the expectation that they should be fluent? Additionally, do the contestants really get the opportunity to do research on these specific concepts beforehand?
So that's two questions, but we will generously answer them both. The first question is, sometimes there is an interpreter. I know in the case of Orgotic, there was, and we allowed Orgotic to speak their first language on screen sometimes to explain things, because he'd say, well, I really don't know how to explain this in English. We're like, oh, it's fine, we'll subtitle it or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Neo, I don't think we had anybody on hand. Anna, we did. Ian, will you give us your Anna?
Anaphylactic from Glasgow and a venom in the Brisbane. Oh, and I'm sorry, I don't know enough today. Oh, also, Anna, I want my shirt back. P.S.
So, yeah, Anna did have an interpreter.
God, I love it.
And then, do they have time to research it? Yes, they do have time to research it. They're given sort of examples of exactly what we're talking. That's why sometimes when they miss the mark, I'm confused. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, here are pictures of exactly what I am talking about.
I am confusion.
Yeah. So sometimes that really throws me for a loop. But I guess you have to decide as an artist how close do you want to hit the nail on the head, and how much do you think we want to see of your originality? So I'm sure it's a balance, but sometimes I literally say, don't do that.
Oh,
and then
yep.
They do it, and then they go home and they're mad, and I'm like, explain that to me, please.
But you did it.
But you did it anyways. Astrid.
Well, that's all the questions we're going to answer today, because for next week's holiday episode, we're going to read all of your listener mail and try to answer as many as we possibly can for that special holiday episode. We're also going to be reviewing the 1980s Santa slasher Christmas Evil, so make sure if you want to partake in the Junior Mints Movie Club movie review that you go ahead and watch it before the next episode is out. Happy holidays, uglies.
The Boulay Brothers Creatures of the Night is hosted and produced by Drakmorda and Swanthula Boulay, along with co-host Ian DeVogler, with music by Neuron Spectre.